The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 20th day of February, 2013. The Dow down 36, S&P down 8, comp down 20, gold down 22 bucks, and crude down $2.25 a barrel. Crude has really tanked just here in the last hour, and I haven't seen the headlines that substantiate the huge sell-off, but it sure cratered fast. All right, the chart up on the big screen is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. That is the hourly chart. If you can't see my chart, just go to the homepage of CFRN. On the right-hand side, there's a red, white, and blue button. Click the button, follow the instructions, and you'll be able to see my charts, not just today, but each and every day, all the way up through the end of March, before you need to register again. It's a 30-second process. You'll be back in no time. Now, the beauty is you not only are able to see my charts, but you can participate in the discussion. You can ask questions. And I always try to get to your questions. Richard, today, type that question in again. I'll make sure that I ask it. I apologize that I missed it yesterday. When you get in here, there's a little chat box. You can just type your little fingers off. Type your heart out. Whatever it is you want. If it's a market we're looking at or a market you want us to look at, or maybe it doesn't even have anything to do with the markets. We've been known to go off topic, to actually discuss things other than the market from time to time. So come on in. Now, the chart up is the S&P 500. This is the hourly. Monday was President's Day, very quiet day, two-point range day, 15-16 on the low side and 15-18 on the, or 15-19 on the high side. It was a three-point range. We had sent out a tweet Sunday night, early Monday morning, to consider being long above 15-18. That tweet translated into a pretty good move up to 15-28. Up to this zone at 15-28. Now, yesterday, as you remember during the show, we kept waiting for this thing to work its way up there. Come on, come on. It finally got up there. Once it got to the zone at 27-28, it spent 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, about 20 hours, just kind of meandering across the top of the zone. Do we have anything above that zone? You know, we do. We have one more zone north of the 27-28. Today's Wednesday. The markets feel heavy. Will we see it? I don't know. I do know that if we get above, back above 27-28, we do have a target to shoot for. Okay? Because for now, the market it seems to be pretty comfortable back below 22-23. This morning, or last night, we put a tweet out on the S&P to consider being short below 15.2575. Now, we put that tweet out when the market was up here. Okay? So, you had to wait the whole night through for that thing to finally kick in this morning. But it did, and the payoff was pretty good. About 5.75 points if you stayed in all the way down. If you're a partner, you were probably scrambling to get out here at the zone because you anticipate support, but it kind of shot right through it. Now it looks like we're coming back to get that consolidation. Because remember over here on Tuesday, we just blew through it. Now over here, we're going to blow through it again. That would be highly unusual. What would be more normal, if there's such a thing, is that price would pull back here into the zone and we would go sideways a little bit and do some consolidating or coiling. Depends on whatever term you like to use. So two tweets in the S&P so far this week. One to be long above 15.18, that worked out very well. And to be short below 15.2575, that worked out very well. Had a tweet on crude last night, and I even said in the tweet, I am definitely not the go-to guy for crude trades. And I was looking to buy a pullback in the crude, and it pulled back all right. The bottom fell out, so that didn't work out so well. We had a yen tweet that paid off like immediately to the upside, 15 pips, and it paid off so quickly. I came back and I said, look, this thing is already handed up 15 pips. Now it's back below the entry. So continue to watch both sides of the tweet. This was an either-or tweet. Consider being long above this number, short below this number. It's out on the Twitter feed. You can go look at it. So it triggered the upside very quickly. Okay. And then it got back into that neutral zone. And then it triggered on the other side. And I came back in and I said, now watch both sides because they're both still in play. And sure enough, so you were able to trade this thing in both directions to do quite nicely. And the only other tweet that I put out last night would have been the one here on gold to get short below 1605. And, you know, trying to be a funny guy, I said, consider being short gold below 1605 for a little walking around money. You know, little pocket change. I was looking for, you know, a reasonable decline. Quite frankly, I wasn't looking for a decline of this magnitude. That's a lot of walking around money right there. So, as tweets go, it was pretty tweeterific. Now, Google's got news, man. Stock hit an all-time high yesterday. Big news. And you heard me talk about the Google Glasses. And, you know, we were trying to get Michael to go to the developers conference to write code for the glasses. I thought they were going to drag this thing out over the course of a year. That's what the original press releases said. The developers would spend the entire year working on the glasses, and they wouldn't even be available to the public until 2014. Well, today a press release comes out that says something a little bit different. Google is looking for bold, creative individuals to help shape the future of glass. Now, that's how the cool kids refer to it now. They're not called glasses or Google Glasses. It's just glass, all right? That word has another connotation that's not so friendly, but I guess they are going to overlook that. Developers have gotten the chance to play around with Google Glass and create additional ways to use the glasses. My goodness, the developers conference was all of, what, a week ago? Maybe two? But what about your everyday consumer? Well, that's not supposed to happen until 2014, according to the last press release. Well, get ready. Google is now opening up Glass to the public, slowly but surely. But in order to get them, okay, you can't just rush down to the store and get some. No, it's not quite that easy. In order to get them, you have to apply. You got to apply to get them. You got to apply via Google Plus or Twitter. That's right. Not everybody's going to get a pair. Now, here's how you do it. You have to submit an application that is 50 words or less saying what you would do if you had glass. You also have to include the hashtag #IfIHadGlass. You can include up to 5 photos and a short video that's 15 seconds or less. In order to get notified if you win, you have to follow Project Glass on Twitter or Google+. You also need to be at least 18 years old and live in the U.S. The deadline is February 27th. If selected, Google will reach out to you and invite you to become a Glass Explorer. If you accept, you will need to pre-order the Glass Explorer Edition for $1,500 plus tax, and you will have to attend a special event in New York, San Francisco, or Los Angeles to pick them up. Wow. I don't think there's ever been a product launch like this in history. First, you got to apply for the chance to buy it with a creative essay of 50 words or less using the hashtag #IfIHadGlass. Then you have to follow Project Glass on Twitter to find out if you win. If you do win, you then have to buy a plane ticket and go to either New York, San Francisco, or L.A. to the special event. And when you get there, you still got to shell out $1,500 to get a pair of glasses. Now, why in the world would anybody go through all that? I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you exactly why people would go through all that. This is going to blow your mind if you haven't seen it. And this is the tip of the iceberg. That's the reason they want people to use these things, is so that they can figure out what it is they can do with them. Now, this is somebody here monkeying with them just to show you how tough they really are. Okay. Let's have a look. Big, beautiful photos of Google's computerized glasses show off what they can do. All right. Those are the little things that go on your nose. Okay. The little piece that goes in front of your eye. And this kind of wraps around your forehead. Are you feeling it? Okay. You just stepped outside. It's 5:23. Okay, maybe it's in the afternoon. Yeah, that's more like a sunset than a sunrise. All right, so it's 5:23 in the afternoon. You put your glasses on, you look, and your glasses say okay. So in other words, everything's okay, right? If you want to take a picture, you can just tell glass to do it. You're wearing the glasses, you're playing with your kid, you're swinging them around in the backyard, and you just say, take a picture. Snap. You don't have to put your kid down to go get your phone, or go get your tablet, or go get your anything. You just say, take a picture, and snap. Or you're at your daughter's ballet recital, you're sitting in the audience. You don't have to be one of those crazy parents all up in the aisle, all up front, you know, trying to get in front of everybody. You just sit there, and you just say record, and it just records. You're in Times Square. It's New Year's Eve. The confetti is falling. Well, yeah, you can look at it. You can take a picture of it. You can video it, but you can also have a video hangout. Your friends back home in Cleveland, they can watch the stuff fall with you. How amazing is that, right? I don't know if you're getting this. You're standing in Times Square. You're wearing the glasses. You're seeing all of this. These are your friends at home. You're together on a Google Hangout, and they're watching this with you. And they're all going, dude, you're so cool. You're in Times Square wearing the glass. All right, now this is a good one. You're out hiking. You've got your glasses on. And all of a sudden, it just overlays this little map right on front of this little mountain in front of you. Boynton Canyon Road tells you can go this way or you can go this way. Google Glass puts directions right in front of your eyes. Now, in case you can't figure out what this guy's doing, he's looking down at his snow boot, which he's attaching to his snowboard, I believe. And he is speaking to the person next to him, who is probably putting their snowboard on too. And he simply says, race you to the bottom. And this is going to pop up on their screen. You follow me? It's cold, the wind's blowing. So he just says to him, hey, race you to the bottom. And the message pops up on his friend's screen. Right. It'll also serve as your personal assistant, meaning you can ask Glass just about anything. You're going across the Brooklyn Bridge, and you can just say, hey, tell me about this bridge. It'll tell you. If you're trying to communicate in a foreign language, Glass will translate your voice. Bon bang. Half a pound Chinese. Simplified. Now, okay. This says Glass will translate your voice. In other words, you speak. The glasses are going to, in turn, speak Chinese. I know. It will also give you answers before you even ask for them. You walk into the airport. Now, these glasses already know, because of your Google Calendar, that you've booked a flight to fly out on JetBlue, flight number 644 at 135. From San Francisco to JFK. So when the glasses sense that you have stepped into the airport, boom, puts it right up on your screen, lets you know it's leaving in 3 minutes. Because it knows that you need this information. Because you've booked a flight to fly out today in 3 minutes, and you just walked into the airport. It knows the glasses know you're in the airport, so they tell you what you need to know without you having to ask for it. Glass is very strong and super light on your face. Look at that. You know, I had concerns about that when I first saw them. I go, well, man, those things are going to break the first time you wear them. Apparently, they're pretty sturdy. And pretty sharp looking. Now, that's a fine pair of Foster Grants if I've ever seen any, right?
Right.
And they come in different colors. There you go, guys. The future, it's here. It's right now, the future. Now, take a look at the video below to see how it would feel to have Glass. Well, okay, I haven't even watched this. How long is it? 2 minutes. Might not be any good without the sound, but we'll see. Over here it's saying OK Glass. Oh, it just told it to record. I think, guys, without the sound, it doesn't make as much sense, so we're going to skip that. But I'll try to remember to put a link out on the blog. So this was from businessinsider.com, but you can probably just Google Glass, and you'll find that slideshow that shows you everything Google wants you to know, and that explains why you would be willing to write a 50-word essay, which includes the hashtag, if I had glass, why you would post that for the world to see, and why you would follow their feed and wait excitedly for them to notify you that you've won the right to get on a plane and fly to Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York and pay $1,500 to get a pair of these glasses. Amazing. I'm telling you, in 3 years, you walk out your front door, everybody will be wearing these glasses. Well, there'll probably be some holdouts. But it's until they're replaced with something smarter, something that you don't have to wear on your head. You know, maybe it's like one of those contact lenses that you put in your eye. I mean, that seems like quite a stretch. But now think about it. Go back 5 years in time before the iPhone. These glasses, did they seem like a bit of a stretch? Let's get used to this technology before we start putting contact lenses in our eye. But this is amazing, and this is not someday technology. This is, the developers have already got their hands on it, and the public is gonna have their hands on it here, you know, within a month or so. You're gonna go to the mall and you're gonna see people who went through this process, who won the contest, who got on the plane, who spent the $1,500, and now they're wearing the glasses. They're explorers. They're called glass explorers. Amazing. Amazing times we live in. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Ah, so, with all that excitement, it's getting warm in here. you ready?
Yeah, it's a good day.
Hey, we had a good day in the live trading room. Once again, we... did the point thing that came, would it take a half hour today or something?
39 minutes, yeah.
Now, see, on the days that we're able to say 39 minutes, we don't take that lightly. That's not a casual thing because we know what it's like other days when you really have to work for it.
Yeah, yesterday, for instance.
Yeah, like yesterday. Just go listen to yesterday's recap, and that's the other side of the story. So...
yesterday was 77 minutes. Well, today, I mean, yesterday we didn't start off with a losing trade. Yesterday we started off with three break-even trades, and then we had our two-point trade. But it took 77 minutes for it all to come together. Of course, the first 10 minutes I was a little mixed up, and I probably missed the trades that we could have gotten in the first 10 minutes. But this morning, you know, this morning our first trade was a loss, so we had to make that back and then make the 2 points on top of it, and that took 39 minutes. It is what it is. I actually ended with plus $240 a contract when we hit the 2 point mark because we had a nice trade on crude oil. We had a trade on gold and crude oil going at the same time, and they both ended up being good winning trades. At the time, gold won 12 ticks, or gold made 12 ticks, and crude oil made 20. But I'll get into that.
You know, I see that Kyle had typed in while I was talking. There's a rumor of another big commodity fund going under. He says that could be pressuring crude and cattle. Cattle? I think you meant gold. Maybe you meant cattle. I don't know. Maybe cattle's now.
I don't know.
And did you answer Bing's question?
I did not answer Bing's question. I saw Bing's question, but I didn't answer it.
Okay. Bing, we'll get you some information.
Yes, let me see. Bing, are you in the... I don't think Bing's in the trial at this point, right? Anyway, I'll add Bing's name to the list. can. All right.
And in answer to your question, Roger, yes, I do. Cliff, what if you already wear glasses? You know, I don't know. I asked that question the other day. Because I have to wear reading glasses to read, so I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm sure we'll see that addressed as the explorers start getting theirs. In fact, I'm going to start following that Twitter feed and that Google Plus feed, and I'm sure somebody will ask that question, and we'll get an official answer. So,
official. A formal response. All right. All right, Bing, I'll send you some information anyway. Okay? All right, so everybody should be looking at my charts at the moment, right?
Yep, got them.
I believe. All right. Well, then let me start my recap. We really didn't do all that much trading this morning. Come to think of it, I mean, it started off, it seemed like we were going to do more, but once things started to really take off, you know, we're up $2,030 per contract on the month. Now there's a few less days in this month than there were last month and the month before. So hitting that $4,000 mark is going to be a challenge. We only have, 2 days left this week and 1, 2, 3, 4 days left next week. So that's going to be a little bit of a challenge to get there. Need to average, you know, $200 a day. But that's all right. Bing, I'll email all that stuff to you, okay? All right. Let me start the recording, and then we'll get into it all. All right. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, the 20th day of February 2013. Wow, where did February go? Only 8 days left. All right, well, that said, let's do the results. We ended plus 4 ticks on gold and plus 20 ticks on crude this morning in the live trading room. We took a Russell trade. We ended up getting a break-even on that one. It took us 39 minutes to get to our 2-point profit target today. Okay, 39 minutes. Our first trade was a losing trade. I'll go over that in just a minute, but let's just jump in here on the crude oil. Now, I'm going to talk more about the beginning of crude than what happened right in here. All right, we had a great entry on crude right here. This was the start of the crude. Now, the way that we do our trading, you know, we're always trading with the trend, and our setups are always the same across all the markets. Our time frames are the same, the indicator sets the same, everything is the same across all the time frames. Everything that we do, all the markets that we do, it's all the same time frame, everything. All right. If you have not taken a trial with us and you want to take a trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply, sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room, and you get access to the charting platform and the indicator set. You'll be able to sit there and watch us put the trades on, explain the trades as they come together. You know, typically I'll tell you before the trade's going to happen or before the trade triggers what your entry point will be, where you're going to be looking to get long or short. I'll show you when I get long and when I get short. I'll let you know when all that happens. You can see in here this morning, we had crude oil in the pre-market was moving up and moving up and moving up. It got up here, it sort of plateaued. Then it started to move down. I had drawn this trend line in here, and on the close down below that trend line right here, you could have taken a short trade. Okay, I missed that opportunity, and it moved down. It came back up, hit the BBC. I drew another trend line on there. How do you draw the trend lines, you might ask? Well, become a partner, get into the live trading room, and all that will become pretty obvious, hopefully, over time. We have, you know, hundreds of videos in our members area for you to go and watch to see how we do this. Actually, if you just go and watch the recaps that we have on the website, I go over it in detail there quite a bit, too. Right here, we had the close down below that trend line right there is where I got short. What I was really looking for here, and everyone in the live trading room, because we were at an even number here, it was 97. You know, we could have taken this close right here at 97.01, but I wanted to see one more close down. And then I said, if we break this level right here, this 96.98 level, if we drop through that, we should see, no, it should be explosive. We should see quick movement after that. And it was. It was very quick movement after that. I took 20 ticks profit on this trade. And obviously you can see it really tanked. I mean, it was between right here at our entry at 97 and down here at 95. That's $2,000 a contract. There was a lot of opportunity for you to make money in there. You can see I highlighted areas in here as it was happening, as it was coming around. I highlighted all these different areas where you could have placed trades. And there's a lot more in here. You know, if you look for the divergences and you look for the areas where you could have drawn trend lines, you know, there's a bunch of them in here. You look for the divergence, and right up above it, on this move down, you know, there's almost always going to be a spot where you could have drawn a trend line. So, you know, the way to get in on these trend line trades like this is when you have divergence down here on the slingshot, like this right here, or this, or this, or this, or even this, or this, you draw a trend line up the bottoms, and you wait for a close down below the trend line. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. When you have a strong trending market like this, that's how you do it. All right. Then something happened right here at 11 o'clock. It was like the crude inventories came out at 11 o'clock, because this is similar to what happens when the crude inventories come out. But as far as I know, they didn't come out today, and they're due to come out tomorrow. Tomorrow at 11 o'clock. But anyway, more opportunity in here, looking for the closes down below with the divergence, okay? We lost divergence in here, so not looking for any trades in here. Got the divergence back, but we didn't have any trades in here. Lost the divergence again. And when the market starts jumping around a lot like this, you see how many bars there are from this minute to this minute. All these bars. All right. Then it started moving up. And there were trades here on the way up with the bullish divergence. Then it switched directions a little bit for a second in here. There was no trade on the short side. Went back on the long side. There were more opportunities in here on the long side. All right. This was the close of the morning session. There was one last opportunity right here at the close of the morning session, and then I stopped looking at it. But you can see there were a couple more opportunities in here on the long side. We're using the same indicators, the same trade setup, the same everything across all the markets. I've said that already. Here is how to do that trade that I showed earlier over here on the crude oil, like the one that I took on the crude, right in here. All right, the close down below the trend line, because it was blue in the cycle, we had the big bearish divergence. There was, let's see. Hang on. Here we go. Oop, not that one. Wrong picture. Here we go. Right here, the close down below the trend line right there, just like this. All right, with bearish divergence. That's when you jump in the trade. Okay? As I've said many times, the potential in the trade is the space in between the green line and the cycle. All right. If you have a lot of space, you have a lot of potential. And in all these cases here, we had some pretty good potential in the trades. All right. That was crude oil. Now, crude just went nuts there at 11 o'clock. I don't know why, but I really stopped looking at it after a while. It became a distraction to me. You know, if it was the only market I was trading, there was a ton of opportunity there if it was the only market that I was trading. Okay. But it wasn't the only market I was trading. I was also trading this one over here, the Russell. Now, on the Russell, we took a close down below the trend line, the same stuff, all right, the same thing that we look for on all the markets. It's the same thing. We tested the BBC. We had a down close off the BBC, but we had blue in the cycle, so we needed a close below the trend line. The close was right there. I was telling everyone when I get into this trade, I got in at 930.4. I was telling everyone when I get into the trade, it's going to get down here to 929. I said, look for it to get down there to 929. Once we had gotten down below the MA1 right here, I moved my stop down to break even, and it came back up, took me out of break even, and then it dropped. It actually dropped from all the way up here. I was in at 930.4, and it dropped all the way down to 924.4. So that is $600 a contract right there. That moved down. But anyway, that is that. That's what the Russell did this morning. It went zone to zone too. Within all that, it went zone to zone. The crude oil starting to move again. For those of you guys who are partners, the crude oil starting to move again. It's pulling back up, about to test the BBC. Here's the trend line right there. Bearish divergence. Look for a test of the BBC with a down close or a close, a down close below the trend line. This bar here, if it closes up, you're going to have blue on the cycle, so you're going to need a close below the trend line. There it is. You're going to need a close below the trend line. All right. For all the partners who are in here watching right now. Gold. Let's go to gold. Gold had a bunch of trades today. Some of them were great. Some of them were not so great. I started off with this losing trade right here. I got long right in here. You know, we had a bullish cross. Here, let me bring up that other picture. This one. Okay, step by step. Step one, we had a cross of the MA1 over the BBC. All right. We had the MA1 cross over the BBC right here. MA1 crossed over the BBC. Step two is it pulls away from the BBC. See the space in there. Step three is it pulls back down, tests the BBC, and then gives an up close in the direction of the cross. In this case right here, it didn't pull all the way back down. It had so much momentum, it didn't pull all the way back down to the BBC. It just closed up above. So I went long on the up close, and it eventually stopped me up. All right. That happens, unfortunately. Then it turned around and changed directions. I missed this one. I wish I would have gotten this one, but it turned around and changed directions. Step one is the cross down below. Step two is the space. Step three is the test with the close in the direction of the cross. It was a down cross, down close. Step four is the bearish divergence. That was a picture-perfect trade right there. I think I missed it because I was looking at something else or reading something else, but that was a perfect trade right there. I know some of our partners in the live trading room got that trade this morning. That one right there would have put you up on the day. I missed that one. I missed that one. I missed that one. I missed that one. I did get into this one. Now, this is the one where I was also short and crude at the same time. So I was managing both trades at the same time. It was a pretty intense minute for me. But fortunately, it was only a minute. So right here, it was, again, just like that picture. All right. And this is actually a crude oil picture from, you know, a month ago, a month and a half ago. But it's always the same. It doesn't change. You get your MA1 cross below the BBC. The BBC is the green line. Space in here. Space in here. Test of the BBC, which is the green line, with a down close. Right? Just like over here. And check for your divergence. You have divergence. Right? Divergence was right there. So my entry was right there. All right, this was another one of those ones I said if we break down through this level, it should be explosive, and it was. There was another opportunity right in here, same type of thing, right in here, again. You know, if you miss the first one, just keep your eyes open, there'll be another one. I got that one, I missed that one, and there was one up here that I missed too. Let's see, I drew that trend line, but we had blue on the cycle, so we needed a down close right in there, or right down here, for a possible move down. I don't know if that one actually stopped out. Seth, I think you can probably remind me. And that was it. It's the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. I took a trade over here. I ended up taking break even on this one toward the end of the morning session, and that one ran up another 20 ticks. The same thing over and over and over again. You see, here's another one. This is just like the other one, way back here. Isn't it? I mean, look at this. If I could highlight an area like this and copy it, you know, all I did here, I wish I could, but all I did right here was just copy this little section. I mean, this, my square. You know, if I paste, it's just going to paste my square. So not really illustrating anything, but that I know how to cut and paste. But the same exact thing over and over and over again, right here. All right, the same thing. In this case, the cycle was blue when you got your down close, so you need to close down below the trend line. That's all. Simple as that. There's your trend line. There's your down close. There's your move down. All right, same thing's happening right here. Right. Okay. And that's all you have to do, guys. That's all there is to it. You learn that stuff, you can do what you need to do. Let's see, on the NQ, I didn't take any trades on the NQ this morning. I don't even have an NQ DOM up, but I did point out some trades. Let's see. Things started over here. Let's see, right in here. All right, we had the same stuff. You know, it went to pull back. We had a bearish cross, space, pullback, bearish divergence. It didn't hit the BBC, so you need to close below the trend line. Right in there, it moved down. Over here, it tested the BBC. We had blue on the cycle, so the up close was good, and it moved up. Over here, we had a test of the BBC right here with a down close with red on the cycle for the move down. Okay, the same thing over and 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 over again. Why is the divergence required for the setup? The divergence is what tells you, you get so much information from the slingshot. I mean, this whole thing without the slingshot would be, you know, it's a crapshoot. Because you don't know when you get into a trade. Without the slingshot, you don't have any idea how much potential there is in the trade. You don't have any idea if a trade's likely to stop right where it is and change directions. You don't know any of that stuff. With the slingshot, you, like right here, when the green line hit the cycle right there, you had a pretty good idea that it was going to start pulling back from right there. All right? You had a pretty good idea. When you entered this trade right in here, you know, this is the trend line, this is the down close, so you're looking at this right here for your entry. When you entered this trade right here, you had a pretty good idea of what to expect in the trade because you knew the green line was going to work its way down into the cycle. You expected the green line was going to work its way down into the cycle. All right? That's why you need the divergence. If you don't have the divergence, then you just don't know. Okay? That's a good question, though. What are my favorite markets to trade? I'll trade anything that's moving. I trade anything that's giving me the setups. It just happens that crude oil and gold are the ones that give the most setups. You know, but I trade anything. Patrick, sometimes I am a little too early, but I, you know, I have rules that I follow. So it's always the same, okay? I did, Gary. And I still owe you a call. I know I still owe you a call, Gary. But yeah, I did. And let's see. All right, that was the NQ. On the ES, there was a trade opportunity in here. The same thing, guys. We waited for it to get down below the weekly trading zone, you know, because it was sideways in here. Once it finally did, there was a shorting opportunity right here. You can draw a trend line up the bottoms, came up, tested the BBC, had bearish divergence with blue on the cycle, so you needed a down close below the trend line. So the entry was right in there at 15.26 and a quarter. And look, it dropped all the way down there to 15.1975. 4 or 6.5 points. We looked at other things over here briefly. We looked at natural gas, the yen, briefly, but there wasn't really anything happening over there that we could do anything with at the time. You know, we kind of watched it, but nothing really happened. On the euro, there was some movement on the euro. There was one opportunity in here that Frank pointed out. It tested the BBC and gave a down close. We had red on the cycle and a little bit of divergence. You could have shorted right in here at 33.81. That dropped all the way down to 33.71 for 10 ticks. 10 ticks on the euros, like 10 ticks on the ES for 2.5 points. There was another one right over here at 33.64. All right here. You see how we have the bearish divergence? We closed below that trend line. From 33.64, it tanked all the way down to 33.40. That's 24 ticks. That's the equivalent of 6 points on the ES. All right. There's another one right in here for a couple of points worth. And that's it. So the euro worked out okay. The trend line is required. Hang on. Let me bring up that picture. Okay, Ken. The trend line is required in two occasions. One is when the cycle is not the right color. And two is when it doesn't hit the BBC. Okay. So one right here. It didn't pull all the way back to the BBC. There was so much momentum in the market that it didn't pull all the way back to the BBC. Two was over here, The cycle was the wrong color. The cycle happened to be the wrong color over here as well, so it can be both at the same time. But right here, it did hit the BBC, but the cycle was the wrong color, so you needed to wait for the close above the trend line. Okay. User's connected from another location. That's not good. Somehow, I just connected from another location. I need to figure out what the heck just happened there. All right.
Do you have your tablet?
If you have an 8-tick range chart, does it give you wider slingshot divergence so there'll be more reaction time to enter the trade? If you have a wider slingshot, you need to use more risk. All right, more risk and more profit potential. So yeah, there'll be more reaction time to enter the trade. That's true. But I mean, let's just look at one. Let's look at gold with an 8-tick range. All right. You know what? I just disconnected somehow. I can't switch over to it somehow. Somebody just connected me on another computer. Let me just disconnect them.
Michael, do you have the platform on your tablet?
I do not.
No. Okay.
I don't know what just happened there, though. How I possibly could have been connected on another computer, but I just reconnected here, and let me just make sure that nobody plays any trades. I don't know. I have...
Because you can be on your tablet and your desktop at the same time.
Now, you know what I'm wondering? Because I've been doing some work, I have it on other computers, but they would have to type in the password unless it had auto-reconnect on. Let me just check and make sure no trades have been placed there in that few minutes. Okay, it's all good. All right. So I was going to show you on an 8-tick range. No, that was... I wish it were that simple, but here we go. Because I was doing that work, I have things up in other locations, and if somebody just opened up one of the laptops that I was doing work on, it might have done an auto-connect or something like that. All right, so here we have an 8-tick range chart. Okay. Here we have an 8-tick range chart, and you would look for the same exact things on an 8-tick range chart. You would just look for... you look for your divergences. You draw your trend lines. You do the same stuff over and over and over again. Okay? Like right in here. You see how on the 4-tick range it was right there. On an 8-tick range, you would shift it back a bit here. And though the entry on the 4-tick range would have been right here, on the 8-tick range it would have been up here. Your risk would have to be 16 ticks. On the 4-tick range, I use 8 ticks risk on everything, because it's twice the bar size, all right? On the 8-tick range, you would have to use 16 ticks risk, but then you would look for probably 16, 20 ticks target on every one, too. All right, so your entry would have been on the up close right here on this one. Over here, you tested the BBC. Give it down close. Let's see. If you draw the trend lines in there, the up close was right there with the red cycle, so you would have gotten long right in there. And that went from 82.6 all the way up to 85. That's what, $240 a contract? And you would have been risking 160 to make that 240. Over here, well, that wouldn't have worked out right either. It wouldn't have had any trade right in there. But anyway, is it possible to risk 4 ticks only and still be net positive gain on an 8-tick range? I don't know. On a 4-tick range, I don't do it. Okay, there's a bunch of questions. Let me just go back and answer one of them. How many trades did I take today? How many wins? How many losses? I had one losing trade. I think I had two break-even trades and two winning trades, I think. No, I had one break-even trade. I had one losing trade, one break-even trade, and two winning trades. That's how it went. I think I had four trades on the day. Is it possible to risk 4 ticks only and still be net positive gain? I'm sure it's possible. We do have some guys that are actually working on that that sort of a solution. The theory is that once you're in a four tick range, when it hits the BBC, it's either going to be right or wrong. And if it's right, usually four ticks is enough to keep you in the trade. Okay, if it's wrong, then you only lose four ticks. Let's see, you're curious about the four tick range bars. You use Ninja and they're not the same as a four tick range. Is there some other type of range bar? This is a normal range bar. I don't know what Ninja has. You know, our stuff isn't available on Ninja. Every bar is four ticks in height. Okay, every single bar is four ticks in height. Every bar has a range of four ticks. Every single market that you saw me trade today had four tick range bars. Every bar was four ticks in height. If you keep things uniform like that all the way across the markets, then you don't have to do any additional processing yourself mentally when you're putting a trade on. You know, you just have to know where the setups are, and the risk is always the same. You know, for me, the risk is always the same. Okay. And let's see, there was another one. That was that. So to recap, I did that. All right. That's it. I think I covered all the questions. If anybody has any more questions, feel free to email us at support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net. Thomas, I trail my stop manually. Okay? Is it possible to have an auto trend line drawn? It is possible. It won't be accurate, but it is possible. I actually created something to draw auto trend lines. I don't know if I have it on this computer, but let me see. It would be in here somewhere. I did draw something in here. I did create something to draw those, but I don't think I did it on this computer. No, I mustn't have done it on this computer. How soon do I get to break even? I put my stop at break even when price gets on the other side of the MA1. Because typically when price gets on the other side of the MA1, like it did right here, it's going to stay there until it changes directions. All right. So, like right over here, I put my stop at break even. I didn't take this trade, but I would have put my stop at break even when price got on the other side of the MA1. Okay. It was CFTL. It was in there, Cliff. Oh, it was. You're brilliant. Let's see what this bad boy looks like. I haven't finished working on it. There it is. See? I haven't finished working on it. It's another one of those works that we have in progress right here. But I am going to remove that. Okay. Let's see. Yes, and more can, I think. All right. All right, guys. I am going to wrap up the recording part of this right here. Okay? And I'll still answer all your questions, but I'm just going to wrap up the recording here. All right? Again, if you haven't taken the free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. We have a we have a thing we're doing right now for all the active partners, because our next workshop is our 100th weekly workshop. We're not going to have a workshop tomorrow night. We're going to do it next Thursday night on the 28th, the last day of the month. It's our 100th weekly workshop, and we're going to give away an e-mini iPad to one of the active partners. That means if you're out there and you're sitting on the fence, you need to become an active partner. If you are an inactive partner and you want to get in on the drawing for the mini iPad, there it is. You see that? You need to become an active partner to get into that drawing. Okay. If you're about to expire, you should have gotten something in your email today. If your partnership is about to expire, not your partnership, but your active status is about to expire, you should have gotten something in your email. So, you know, take care of that business. All right. That said, I'm going to stop the recording.
All right. And if you'll notice, guys, on the screen, it says down here, you can even trade from this baby, but that's top secret, so I can't say any more. Till I get the go-ahead, just know you want to win the iPad Mini. It's every inch an iPad. And it'll follow you wherever you go. Slip right in your pocket. All right. Okay, Michael, good job. Thank you very much. All right, guys, we need to head out to Vegas right now. Visit with David Williams from PageTrader.com. And Robin Dane is with us today, the trading coach. She was out yesterday. She's back with us again today. Again, partners meeting coming up tomorrow night, 9. Oh, there is no partners meeting tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern. We're skipping it because it will be our 100th. Michael already told you that. If you want to be in the free trial, though, go to cfrn.net/apply. Michael, anything else you need to add?
Nope, that's pretty much it for now.
All right, guys, don't touch that radio dial. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show. And Robin, good morning to you. I don't think I've unmuted your mic yet, but I am scurrying over to do so even as I speak and continue to talk. Pitter-patter, talking, and now your mic is unmuted. Good morning, Robin.
And it's a great day in Las Vegas. Thank you for turning me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it's raining here in Phoenix. Yeah. It's a rainy day in Phoenix.
Oh, is it? Yeah, we're getting a little cloudy here. They said it's coming, but we haven't. It hasn't started yet.
Well, it has started on my side of town, Robin.
Oh, not here in Henderson. Nope.
Just a report. It's about 0 degrees here in Chicago.
Oh.
Hey, Bert.
Ouch.
Yeah.
How are you, man?
Hey,
good.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, Robin. How are you?
It's a good day in Las Vegas. You got to come over soon. Get out of that cold.
I will. I should do that. I should.
Hey, Bert, any idea what the news was behind crude tanking today? Was there anything in particular?
I have a guy that trades crude on a professional level, and he said there was some fund that was blowing out of some positions with crude and cattle.
Okay.
That's what I heard. You know, ironically, today is March crude goes off the board today. Maybe it has something to do with that. I know there's been, and I follow it pretty close in the spreads, there's been a relationship and spread has just absolutely gone off the charts. I know there was some people stuck in that trade. So I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. I just think they just called around and someone's making up some information. I don't know.
Okay. All right, David, so what's up with you? Herbalife, they had their earnings call today, and I heard that they play this real. They have their own little theme song, and it's quite creepy, and I read the lyrics to it.
I'd like to hear it. If it's creepy, I want to hear it.
Well, I don't have an audio I'll see if I can find an audio version of it. I just read lyrics. The lyrics were, they weren't that creepy. They were just kind of 60s hippie creepy a little bit.
Oh.
But, you know, okay. Everybody
read. You have a little 60s hippie thing going on yourself.
Yeah, I'm
really
a little creepy, too. Yeah.
All right. I'm not saying you're creepy, but you have a 60s hippie thing going.
I like that hippie thing.
Hippie. All right.
Well,
I used to be one of those in the old days.
Yeah, didn't we all? So what's going on, David? You got anything going on?
Well, let's see. Well, quite a bit. Actually, there's quite a bit of movement that has happened in a number of markets today. So we'll go over those and see how they look just from our perspective. We kind of passed a milestone. I don't really talk about this much on the radio program, but yesterday we had our webinar, which I forgot to mention on the radio, for our upcoming Reflected Wave course up at March 16th and 17th here in Las Vegas at the Mirage. And for the last 20 or so months, we've been trading a options account. As most people know, all we've been doing is just selling time premium and against reflected wave turning points, larger ones, larger than daily. There have been a few that have been daily when they are super important for one reason or another, but for the most part, it's been longer-term stuff. And really, all options trading is longer-term. You're not buying and selling options unless you're on the floor or something, and there's no floor left. So, I mean, you know, it's all pretty much options are longer-term positions. And we're selling them, and so that actually adds to the long-term nature of them. There are times where you get into them and you might end up profitable on that day, and you have to say to yourself, well, who am I in this trade? You know, am I looking for a short-term move, or am I looking for the longer-term, you know, multi-day or multi-week or multi-month advance? So what we've been doing is selling these options from various stocks. For the most part, various stocks. There's a few shots there, I think, in some commodities where we might have sold against some other things, but the vast majority of it is just selling time premium in the stock market. And I remember when we were up at $20,000, you know, we had $20,000 in gains, and then, you know, a little higher and over higher, and since April of 2011. So previously, the most recent statement was we were up at 196. This was previously 196,000. This is not hypothetical. This is actual real statement with real money. And we had gotten to the point where we had a bunch of stuff on, as I've been talking about on the radio, in this advance, this runaway move that we've been in, that we believed would go to 1515 and potentially higher. And so the other day we took off another chunk of them because we got up beyond the 1515. We just thought, you know what, we're in that area where we think we should start lightening up just a little bit, but we took off a little bit more, and so we broke the $200,000 mark. We're at $212,000 in whatever from April of 2011 to now. So, thank you. I mean, it does feel good because it's kind of a slow boat. Options are a slow boat. They're not something where you go in and you make your points for the day. It's more like they're a background position for other trading. And so over this period of time, had a person been doing other types of trading, hopefully he wouldn't have lost $212,000, you know, in his other trading. But, no, the idea is that it's a good core background kind of thing that you could be, anybody that's listening could be doing. You don't have to have a reflected wave in order to sell option premium. That's just our particular approach, what we used in doing so. So, anyway, so that's kind of that's a pretty good milestone. It's a pretty important milestone, and we're going to continue to run that statement, win, lose, or draw, throughout time here, including as we get up to this bigger top that is certainly going to form in the S&P. And so with that, if you'd like, we'll talk about the S&P today, okay, because I think a lot of people may feel that it is over or, you know, something like that. I don't think so. I think that this is just a normal pullback. We're down $6 on the day, and we're really due. I mean, that's one of the things that everybody is looking at and saying, gosh, aren't we due a much larger reversal off this? And yes, under normal conditions, we are due all kinds of things on the downside, but this is not normal behavior. So in spite of today's decline, I still like the idea of buying pullbacks until further notice, until there is some other indication, and I like the idea of simply letting the market show its hand at some important level for the last couple of days above 1526, which we talked about the other day. 1530, 31 is the next level, and they did complete that. I don't think they did that during today's
pit session, but they did do it during the overnight, and then we're testing 15-20 on the downside. Here's the thing I think is important. I don't think we should be retesting 15-15 now. I think we should, if we really are trending above 15-15, maybe I should verbalize this more as a preference. I really at this point would prefer to see them not test for the idea that further advance is coming. I would prefer to see them not test 15-15 at this point any further. We've definitely had our test and bang. You know, we went up to 15-21-75, then we hit back to 15-11, and then we sat back up at 15-18 and pulled back to 15-15 and so on. We've tested it pretty good. So to me, kind of in the back of my mind, this isn't something I'd necessarily give as an indication to somebody, but I would say at this point I would like to see them not test 15-15. I'd like to see them now do this pullback. This is a good, nice little pullback we have. Let's see them hold above 15-15, and that would help me feel more confident in my outlook, you know, which happens to be that we're likely going to see higher prices. So, you know, that's our outlook right now. I don't like the idea of using any kind of tool right now to any kind of overbought or oversold indicator, except for intraday. You know, there may be something that you can do with certain pullbacks and things like that, but it is still a runaway market until it isn't. And although 15-15 has been reached, I think it's likely that we're going to see the 38-40 and or higher before the whole move is over. Robin, did you have something you were going to say?
Nope.
Oh, okay. I was
going to say you did a great job on your options.
So far, yeah. You know,
yeah,
that's
awesome.
Thank you. And, you know, we do use stops in there. If you take a look mm-hmm. at our statement, you'll see that we have losses. There's no question. And there is no holy grail of any kind with regard to living your life. You can't be guaranteed that if you walk out of your office to the restroom that you're not going to be crushed by an airplane that crashes into the building. You know, the odds are very, very slim, but you cannot be guaranteed that. And so risk is always part of this thing, and I stress this to everybody, and I just want to say it again. I don't care how successful you have been, that success can be put at risk every time you don't use, all of that success could be put at risk every time you decide against using a fixed actual stop, not the kind of
yep.
stop that's mental.
Absolutely.
You know, a mental stop is your, if I may say so, your way of getting out of placing a physical stop.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will say, as a matter of fact, some people that I work with will say, I'm going to place a mental stop because I don't want my stop in the market. And, you know, you think about that for a little bit, and you think, okay, yeah, you don't want to let them know that your stop is there, because otherwise then they'll come and get you. That is old school thinking. First of all, the they is in great question. Who are they that's going to come get you? And I know we all talk about that. They're going to take them down. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And mm-hmm. I know we speak in those terms. But the fact is that if they were to pull the market down and hit your stop, then your stop's been hit. I don't particularly care if they did it or if the market did it. If it goes there, we want to be stopped out. We don't want to make a distinction between they doing it and the market doing it, and that it's somehow different, we're going to act differently, or that we're not going to put our stop in because they're just going to go get it. That's not good thinking. Good thinking is this is the market. It goes up and it goes down. If it gets past this point, my current idea is wrong, and I'd like to get out at that point, and I'll reassess the situation. I may mm-hmm. even go short, or maybe I'll go long again if it reconfirms. But I don't care how they get it there and whether they're doing it to you or not. If they get it there, that means they're there, and you should be stopped out. So the mental stop thing, honestly, is just nonsense. It doesn't. It's not a good way to go. You may be frightened of putting your own stop in the market because you're afraid that it's going to get hit. You shouldn't be afraid. What you should be afraid of, this shows you how backwards that thinking is. You should be afraid of trading without a stop.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't
yeah.
be afraid of having one in. You should be that you've mm-hmm. got it exactly backwards. You should be afraid of not trading with a stop. Go ahead, Robin.
It's funny because I just did a coaching call this morning on that exact subject for a very experienced trader. Been in the market for 31 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
31 years.
Long. Tell him to take a break.
A guy lost a trade as a good trader, been all over the place, and same thing. Didn't have a stop in and had a huge, huge loss, and it's just been compounding and compounding. And that's what happens. You'll start to revenge trade. You'll start to do things that you shouldn't do if you have that first big loss. And so it's a snowball effect, and you really have to be careful. And the stop literally stops you from going into that pattern.
Funny thing is that, and I know we've gone over this subject so many times, but it is such an important subject because even the professionals that Robin's dealing with and that I've dealt with, and I'm sure Dwayne as well, there are people, that it happens to everybody. Everybody gets in that mode. But here's the thing. So let's just say they bring them down there, and since you have a mental stop, it somehow is less valid that the market is at that price. And, of course, that's worthless thinking. It really is. It's if it hits it, you want to be out. But the fact is if you've made that distinction, the funny thing is once you've made that distinction and you don't have a stop and it's mental and they keep taking it down, most of the time you won't take your position off.
There's
you and they, and you won't do what you're supposed to do even though you said it was a mental stop. The funny thing is it means nothing because you'll just watch them take it down and say, well, they've taken it so far now. Now they're going to have a bounce. Now I'll get out of break even and, you know, the whole litany of stuff that goes on and on and on. I mean, that's
the deer in the headlights.
The deer in the headlights thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the oldest profession is slipping your stop, is mental stops. I think that's even older than the other older profession. I think people were doing that even before the original oldest profession.
Yep.
It's a mental stop. I have a mental stop. You know, see the guys in the caves and stuff. I'm using a mental stop on this one.
It's so dangerous. It is just so dangerous. And the reality is if the trade is not working and your stop gets hit, one of the things that I try to encourage is that people stick with the trade and watch what's happening so that they can make their adjustment next time but not get hooked into holding on, because then you get into the point where's the pain level to exit. And the pain will get to a point. If it's literally flipped on you, the pain level will get to a point where eventually you'll get out. And, of course, that's when everything turns and goes the other way. Not always, but on many occasions. And so then people justify their not putting their stop in. Well, see, it went my way if I would have just held it longer. And so what happens is they now reinforce a rule, a bad rule.
A bad habit.
Yeah, they win on a broken rule, and that's bad.
Right.
Bad,
no, that's bad, well said. Bad. Yeah, if you're winning on broken rules, you're going to end up, it's not going to end well. So.
No.
Anyway, so yeah, that old mental stop thing, just stop that and just go back to using an actual stop. I don't care how they get it there and if it's them or somebody else. If price gets there, price is there, and you should be stopped out if they hit your stop, period. That's it. It's not mental. It means nothing. It's your idea of a mental stop is just an excuse, if I can be so bold, to not use a physical stop. And if they get to the number, you should be out no matter what. There should be no such thing as a mental stop in your vocabulary anymore. So having said all that, there we are. So the S&P has pulled back. We've tested 1520. This has just as good as odds of any, this level right here, of potentially holding the market bottoming. There are, of course, important levels below us. But if they do end up holding this level, there is a nice bounce that would come off of this. And I think it's tradable. So we're actually already in a trade on the long side here, but we're waiting for them to firm it up. It may take a little more time during the day here. But if they go too much lower, I'm just going to use a mental stop. See what they do. I'll figure out what I'll do when they hit it. A little humor there.
So you're long, mental you're stop. Long the S&P. Is that what you're saying? You're long the S&P?
Yeah, we are. And we're waiting to see. We already have a half exit, but we're going to see if we can hold this position through this retest without being stopped out. And let me tell you where our stop is, just in case. Protective stop is at 1519.50. So we've gotten down to 1975, and just the nature of the trade has us just a tick below that. It isn't always the case that it's just a tick below. That's not a rule for us, so to speak. But we think that there's a possibility that the market has bottomed here, and we'll trade that. We'll see how they play it out. But in the meantime, the longer-term position we think is still bullish. And as we get through any further evidence that that isn't the case, then we'll take advantage of it. But I don't know that I would want to see the graveyard of the shorts that have been holding. And I can assure you that there are through this multi-week advance, because we're now, in this week, we're now 8 weeks straight up. Now,
everybody's waiting for this. Everybody, you know how normally we talk about the level of uncertainty that's in the market? Mm-hmm. We're in a real quandary state right now, because it has gone up and up and up for so long, and so many people have started to short, and it's not working. That a lot of them either flipped their positions, got out of the positions, and so they're in a quandary right now of, am I missing the boat going up, or are we really going to turn here? There's really this indecision right now in the market as to what's going to happen. I think we might have a catalyst with that new fiscal cliff. I think we're, eight days away from that. I think that might have some push in it, depending on what happens with that. But this is quandary time right now of, and there's definitely uncertainty, but nobody knows the direction right this second, because it's been so long.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a runaway market. And
it
that's
is.
And
just,
we've seen them before, and you will see them again.
Yep.
And if you can just recognize them, then you'll know to put your other stuff away and sort of trade in the direction of the trend, because runaway markets are absolutely different markets than normal markets. That's what they are. So it is just what it is. So, Dwayne, you have anything you want to add on all this, on the S&P 500 March contract?
No, nothing that we haven't, I don't think, already. We had a short trade coming into the day, and that worked out. And now we're looking for the market to consolidate here in this weekly zone at 22.23. Our outlook is actually from this point, I would expect to see us consolidate for a little bit longer, maybe at least another hour. But my outlook is for a move back down.
Okay.
So I don't have a trade on at the moment, and I don't have a tweet out at the moment. But
retesting that 15 level
I'm gonna watch this, and then we'll probably put something. We've had two S&P tweets so far this week. One was to be long above 15.18, which went well. This one went well, and I think there may be more downside, but
there may be.
I'm thinking that probably all of the partners, when we came into this zone and started to, we would anticipate this to be some kind of support. So I'm thinking that most everyone is probably out of this for now. Some people may have stuck it out, but I'm looking for lower prices. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Let's see what happens. And in the meantime, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll just watch and see how they trade it. It's very quiet now. This is kind of the dead zone of the day. You've heard of the twilight zone. Well, this is the dead zone.
It is quiet right in here.
We'll see if we can. We've talked about the Twilight Zone, and Dwayne, I know you must have been a fan of the Twilight Zone at some point.
I love the Twilight Zone.
How can you not like the Twilight Zone?
I had nightmares from the Twilight Zone.
No, the Twilight Zone was fabulous, and it was such a great human nature thing. There was so many great human nature things in the story. It wasn't just monsters. It wasn't monsters. It was all human nature stuff. And very, very interesting. And I just want to tell you, and I said this before on the radio, but strangely enough, and this is the Twilight Zone, Rod Serling used to come to my house.
Get out of the city.
Absolutely, without a doubt, my stepfather was a big guy over at California State University of Northridge. When I was a boy, Rod Serling had some connection with it was a college then. I think it hadn't even yet turned into a university. I don't remember when it went to a university, Cal State Northridge. And Rod Serling had some connection with the university, and he and his wife were over at our house on a couple of occasions for dinner. I don't remember seeing him in my mind, but my mom told me that they left their coat there and he came back the next day, that Rod Serling came back the next day. And the funny thing was my mom never made a big deal about the fact that we used to gather around the TV to watch The Twilight Zone, and she was very nonchalant about the fact that he was at the house and that he even had to come back and pick up his coat. And anyway, I would have loved in my life, I would have loved to have met him and looked him in the eye. And
how cool.
Yeah, this was a guy that wrote and had help also, but he wrote a lot of those very, very unique and very deep insight into human nature stories that had great twists on them, you know.
Yeah.
And
I still remember one that I literally would get nightmares from when they went to a cafe and they had a little jukebox thing,
but
give you a fortune.
Yep.
And it would really happen.
Yep.
Whatever your fortune was. Oh, was that scary?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of them though. There was one where they went to a cafe and a bridge had gone out, and they were all in the cafe, and later it turns out that one of them was an alien. I mean, this was not that big of a human nature one, but that cafe thing. There was a lot of cafe scenes in there. Burgess Meredith was a banker in one of them, and he just loved reading books. He just was the most, and he hated to be around people. He just couldn't stand people. He loved to read books, and so during his break, during the banking hours, he would go down and deep down into the bank's vault and just read down there because he didn't want to be around people. He just wanted to read books. One day, he's down there reading, and a nuclear bomb goes off. There's war, and the entire city has just been flattened, completely flattened. He has no idea. He comes up, and he went down when everything was normal, and when he came up, it was just a complete wasteland of smoldering debris.
Right.
And so he's stumbling through debris. He's got his glasses on. He's stumbling through the debris, and he comes across a partially still standing library that still has books in it. And he thinks to himself, oh, God, this is everything I've wanted. The world has been destroyed, and I won't be interrupted by people, and I've got a library filled with books. And he gets real excited, and he does something with his hands. His glasses fall, they go to the ground,
glasses,
and he
yes.
accidentally steps on them
breaks
and
the
breaks
glasses.
Them. And now he can't do what he wanted to do. He can't read, he can't do anything at this point. And there's a lot of, you know, deeper
it's
stuff.
Very
that.
Good. It was just really exceptional. I mean, do they show those anymore?
I haven't seen one in a long time. They do have sometimes the Twilight Zone marathons.
They were fabulous. They were fabulous.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was a great program. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, Rod Serling came over to pick up his wife's coat at my house.
That's
so,
cool.
How are you doing?
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I wish I would have known to say something to him back then, like, hey, that's some pretty neat stuff, your stories there. He's got they had so many great ones, you just can't believe. All right, we'll move on from there. We have some institutional people that we talk to, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the radio or not, but we've been talking and sending out a report that says that gold, because it did break that 1660 level, it would hit 1600, of course. But we also have a further target that gold can be shorted for down to 1562 to 60. We gave that out about 10 points higher in a written form today. We've given it out a few days ago as well, but this morning I'm just suggesting that people just go short. You can just go short in the market. It'll go down to 1562 or lower. The more interesting thing, and that's still about 15 points away. The on-time period for that is actually March, but we're pretty close to March, and the market's kind of in a runaway move on the downside here. So there is something interesting. Obviously, this is a very important thing that's happened. The break of 1660 flips things around and makes the next important bottom move out into the month of March, where they would have to test this 1562 level. And it's likely they'll see it prior to the month actually, you know, before we start March. So either way, what is important now, because we're, to be honest, a little scared about this move as well, because our longer-term position, which is not in the actual metals, but it's in ETFs, we have to figure out now, and we are, where we're going to place our stop. And, you know, I did have a discussion. One of the reasons I brought up the mental thing is I had a discussion with my partner who works on the end of actually doing some of this stuff, the ETF stuff. And he wanted to use, believe it or not, a mental stop. He didn't want to put a stop on the market. And so he suffers from that same disorder. There's no distinction between your stop being in the market and being out of the market. The price either gets there or it doesn't. And when it gets there with your mental stop, you're not going to be able to, you know, the market, if it breaks 1523, if gold does, we could have a 100-point down day. I'm not forecasting that, but I'm saying that's the kind of move we could have. Your mental stop, you're going to be decimated by that with a mental stop. You best have a stop in. You can rest assured we're going to have an actual physical stop in.
I think even more so now that we're in this place of, you know, which way is the market going? This is the time you really want it in.
Yes.
You know, it's just because it's so tenuous right now. It's just it's very, very, it's a different feeling right now than any other time.
Yeah, and you know what? You could also say this. There's a certain degree of just ordinary, plain old self-honesty. You know, if you don't understand what the market's doing, then that should even encourage you more to place your stop.
Yeah.
In fact,
exactly.
If you don't understand what the market's doing, then maybe you shouldn't be trading it. You know, if you're not in yet, why not wait till you understand stuff? Why don't you make a rule and say, listen, I'm only entitled to what I understand,
right,
and go trade what you understand rather than trying to guess at it, because a lot of people, part of their trading system is guessing.
Yeah.
So,
I think that the challenge for people that are new is they don't know. They're in the realm of things they don't know. They don't know.
Yes.
And so they don't have a feeling right now. Whereas traders that are in the market have a feeling about what's happening because of what's been going on. But new traders don't have that feeling yet, and so they just go in there. And so that's where, as a new trader, you want to listen to the people who are a little bit more experienced in what the history of the market has been. And I'm not saying I'm an expert by any means, but I do get these feelings of, nah, I don't like this market. You know, I just get those feelings. And if I'm in any kind of place of uncertainty like that, I just don't trade. And I'll just wait till I can figure things out. And so that's not a bad thing to do. You know, you don't have to go in there every single day and place a trade. And a lot of traders that are new don't realize that. They just want to get in the game.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can hurt them.
Yeah, there's a lot of learning that takes place in that as well, and that it has its own value that, you know, taking losses and gains has its value for you to figure out certain things that do and don't work. And I do want to say also, and I don't want anybody to immediately assume that they're this person, but there are some traders that are very skilled at trading uncertainty. They actually recognize the uncertainty, and they trade it very well. Gold is in that position right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I know you can short it and it's going down to 62, because I can recognize the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they've got further to go, and I knew it 10 points ago when we put the report out, and I knew it 10 points before that. But I'm letting you know that there's a point that there's a level. I'm not claiming to be a great uncertainty trader, but there are people who are great uncertainty traders. And they're able to say, this is really uncertain here, and they know what to do with that. They actually trade the uncertainty.
They leverage it.
They leverage uncertainty. So that's a skill set that we don't talk about a lot, but there are people that do it, and they're just waiting around for the weirdness. They trade the weirdness, the stuff where people are going, God, what is going on here? You know, and that uncertainty, they just go in the direction of uncertainty. They know how to trade that, and they hold on, and they can do very well with that. Gold's in that position right now. That's what gold is. This has that kind of uncertainty. That's why I know it's going lower. The 1562 is actually a roadmap-type target, so I know that's going to be hit. But the uncertainty feeling is there, and there are people that can trade that very well. Most people, when they're uncertain, if they've been around the markets for a while, they just say, hey, I'm just going to leave it alone and wait. But there is a whole set of kind of trading where you're just looking for markets that are uncertain.
Yeah, I have one client that does that incredibly well.
Yeah.
It scares the heck out of me because I don't trade that way. And when I coach him, I'm very fussy about, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And so he just has this knack of trading this uncertainty, just like you said.
Yeah.
And he does so well. it blows my mind each time, because I keep thinking, you know, throwing rules at him, and he just doesn't want to listen to the rules because he does okay with it.
Yeah, well, listen, it's just the opposite. It's like he's living on the other side of certainty.
Yep.
He is. We look for certainty, and we go, we know what certainty looks like. He has the opposite. He knows what uncertainty looks like, and he knows how to trade it. The one thing about uncertainty is it goes on for some period of time. Uncertainty has legs. You know, it runs. So
yeah, it's true. It can be really painful.
It can really go. So you just, you know, that's what happens with uncertainty. So anyway, it's interesting. Some of the people listening to this program may have a knack for that. People have interesting little personal things that they, little very subtle things. We've talked about the pockets of talent or pockets of, you know, insight into something.
One of the things that, you know, we discuss in that situation when somebody is able to do that in those situations, then I'm always go down to the money management and the risk reward type of thing, because that's at least that is similar.
Yeah,
it's a similar area to talk about. That at least if you're going to do that, then make sure that your risk parameters are in place.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, at some point, you probably don't have many people that are trading the opposing thing, which is to trade uncertainty. You don't run into that guy too often.
No.
I do know of at least one that I know that has that sensing, like, this is really weird. I'm long.
Yep.
Well, why? Well, because when it's this weird, it's going a whole lot further in the same direction.
Exactly.
They're out to hurt somebody.
I got one client like that, too. Just one. That's it.
Yeah.
Just one.
Hey, David, there was a question yesterday from Richard that I missed, and I asked him to bring it up again today.
Please.
I apologize for
for
missing it yesterday. No, I wasn't. I apologize to him, not you.
Oh, well,
I mean,
I will
apologize
to
you if you want, but I mean, I apologized to him yesterday because I saw his question after you had left. And does David see February the 25th plus or minus a day as a potential important time period for possibly many markets?
Let's go through these markets and we'll see, because I'm actually right on pretty much the current date right now, but I will check through here. We do have, I think, the 21st, but let's go through these because I'll run into it as we're talking. Let me get back over there real quick. So he's saying February 25th.
That's what he's asking.
Now, if it's Richard that I know,
it is.
He enjoys the bigger picture that can be a really big picture, which includes the astronomical information and data too, which can be very interesting and useful. And we've talked about that before, and I can't discount it because I've worked with it myself and still use certain aspects, no pun intended, of it as a backdrop to some of the stuff. And I just want to say this. My stepfather would have laughed, or not laughed, but he would have, you know, it would have been the most ridiculous thing to him that you would ever consider the planet Jupiter, you know, just naming a planet, which is so far away from us, so many millions of miles, whatever it is, away from us, that you would even consider that has anything at all to do with, you know, where markets are and stuff like that on this little tiny third planet from the sun. But the fact is that it does seem silly until you view the whole thing as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be like saying, here's an atom that makes up my wood desk here. Here's a wood atom. And if I have to do is take one of those orbiting electrons around there and just shift it the slightest bit, and can't get it into a new orbit, and suddenly it's no longer wood. That atom doesn't represent wood anymore, because the way it represents wood is by being exactly what it is. If I move any of those rotating bits in any way, shape, or form, if I did that to millions of those atoms, the desk wouldn't look like wood anymore. It would be something else, because you've changed the whole thing. So you follow what I'm saying? That the atom, you know, a wood atom has very specific characteristics to it, and if you change any of them, the thing ain't wood no more. Or if it's wood, it's a different kind or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, and this can be used to people who talk about the ridiculousness of thinking about Pluto, but Pluto's part of our solar system of which we are a part. So the solar system looks, is like a model in many ways of an atom. And there you go. So if any of those bodies were changed, an argument could be made that a very fundamental change would happen to the whole system. And in that way, the planets are important to what happens on Earth. And indeed, we go to sleep, we wake up. Think of all the things you do that are related to planets.
Well, you go
to bed, that's related to planets because the sun's in a position, the Earth's rotating, it's in a position. Yep. When we have, I mean, you can go on and on. I mean, literally, I know it sounds
animals,
bad,
plants, flowers open.
Exactly.
I mean, just,
all,
it's just
there's so many things that are tied in.
Connected.
Right. So I wouldn't be too quick to discount the planets, mm-hmm. and nor would I be too quick to say, well, that's so far away that it has no meaning.
Yeah.
Because on the atomic scale, that one orbiting thing that's way out there on the atomic scale, that looks like that's way, way out there, like wouldn't have any meaning. But if you change it, that atom's no longer a wood atom. So how are you doing? So anyway, it's a philosophical answer, but it does probably have validity. It probably has real meaning. Okay, so let's go to the U.S. Treasury bond market. We had talked about a February 18th top that was due in this. This is reflected wave. It came one day early, and we expected a reversal. We got that short-term, small, but still on the daily chart. We're still expecting a monthly bottom in the U.S. bond market. We talked about this the other day, and I'll just make it brief, but just the blue moon thing has already started to break up. The low housing prices, low interest rates. The interest rates stay low, but the housing prices are going up. So consider that. One other thing, Dwayne, I had heard, I don't know if you mentioned the news today about this specific thing, but Detroit is in a very sad situation. I think it's Detroit. They're buried in debt. And
yes.
You know, they,
mm-hmm.
they're hopelessly, like as an example, California. California is, it's, well, you cannot, unless there's a bailout of biblical proportion, California is hopelessly bankrupt now, even though they haven't said we're bankrupt. They're bankrupt. They owe like $27 billion. There's no way they can ever get that money. And they got that point, of course, with irresponsible use of taxpayer money, irresponsible entitlement programs, irresponsible waste. You know, it just goes on and on and on. Well, Detroit's in that same position. They used to have 2 million people living in Detroit. It's down to 700,000. Detroit has the possibility of becoming a ghost town.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it could actually end up being Nowheresville. Remember this place? Yeah, they used to build cars and whatever. Yeah, maybe the cars will still be built there. But even as we speak, cars are being built in Silicon Valley now. And that could be the beginning of a trend for where cars are going to be built. Because Detroit, it just isn't happening in Detroit, and I don't know what the government's going to do about it, but the funny thing is that the government's doing the same thing that Detroit did to get into their position, which is, we don't care about debt, we care about our social vision, and our social vision is going to be fulfilled, we'll worry about debt later. And the word debt and dead are very close, you know, so that
Detroit has taken their urban decay and turned it into a bit of an amusement park. You can sign up for expeditions and go exploring in all these buildings, these old buildings, these shells that are falling down.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, if that's what they're left to do, there's a little cleverness to that.
Well, that's just, you know, I mean, that's a city that, I mean, we're talking, you know, we're not talking about ancient history, you know, where thousands of years ago there was an intelligent civilization that lived there. We're talking about 50 years ago.
That we are.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Or even sooner.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, it's kind of sad in a way.
Very sad.
It's not kind of sad. It's obviously sad, and it's I don't know how they're going to get out of that. I just don't see a way out for Detroit, what they're going to do. And we may see more cities go through this because of the spending and the values that have gone down and so on. And so I'm worried for the United States of America. I'm worried about the flagrant continued abuse of taxpayer money. There's only so many taxpayers. There's more and more people that are on the dole. The whole society seems to be accepting the idea that it's that the government owes you something, that the government should send you a check. It seems like there's been a fundamental shift. This president wouldn't be where he is without that shift. And I remember, and it may not be the most fairest of times, But after World War One, World War Two, the hard work ethic was there. If you don't work, you don't eat. You got to get off your butt. You got to go do work. You got to get a job. You have to work hard to get ahead. You have to save. You do have to pay your taxes and so on. That whole thing has run, may have run its course for at least some good percentage of American citizens, because the problem may not actually be just with this administration. It may be that people have, if this may be a sign that people have shifted away from, I want to do, be responsible, take care of myself and my family, more to, I want the government to not only have a safety net under me, I want guarantees that nothing bad is going to happen, and I'm going to demand that guarantee. I'm not looking for an equal opportunity. I'm looking for an equal outcome, you know, to something. So I don't know. It just may be America has just changed its whole shooting match, at least a good portion of it. Otherwise, what we're seeing happening would be appalling to the greater part of the population, because we're all going to have to pay. It's you and me. You know, you can name them to a man. We're all going to have to pay. The rich don't have enough to fix this. That's why the whole business about pointing to the rich is just a bunch of nonsense. It's just a way of getting, it's just an emotional appeal. The real money is in the middle class. It always has been. It's not in the rich. It's the real money in terms of what, where the government can get its big dollars from, is in the middle class. The numbers don't lie. He already got what he needs from the rich, and he's going to raise the taxes on the rich again. He's going to raise it on you again. He already raised it on your payroll taxes. So anyway, don't get me started. All right. The euro, I don't have much to add with the euro, except that in our report that we sent out a few, three, 4 days ago, we were looking for a little bounce in the euro, but we expected the euro to continue its current decline, and we still believe that. There is a wild card, what we call a wild card for this market to have a much larger decline into March, and we'll talk about that as we get into it. So anybody who would be short in this might want to trade that uncertainty, you know, the idea that there really is something much bigger coming. But I don't want to add too much of that. With regard to crude, the crude market did have a really sizable move down today. And one of the things that I look for in these setups, these roadmaps and such, is that I want to see some tricky behavior. And for me, the market's always going to be tricky until it's obvious to everybody, the cab drivers and everybody knows that crude is falling. Once it's really clear to everybody, all the trickiness is gone, and so are the people usually willing to trade at that point, because the market's down and no one wants to short it and all that stuff. But it usually goes a whole lot further even then. So this is good. What they did here, the bounce the other day and then the big slam down, that's good tricky behavior. You know, we're on our way to completing the first half of our roadmap on the way down, and I think this is exactly the kind of behavior that I would expect for today. Not that I expected today's decline, but just the bigger decline overall. I like the fact that they bounced the last couple of days and had a lot of people scratching their heads a little bit. Well, we kind of thought we were going to go a little lower, and then today they slammed them down. Nobody seems to know what the news is. This is all how it goes.
Yeah, no,
everyone's
actually
scratching their head.
Actually, there is some news. Oil futures dropped more than 2% Wednesday in volatile trading ahead of the expiration of the March futures contract. The market was hit by a large block of trades, spurring speculation that a commodity fund got on the wrong side of the market. March crude dropped $2.14, or 2.2%, to trade at $94.52 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. April crude will become the front month contract at the NYMEX close today. It was down 217, or 2.2%, at 94.93. NEDX, which supplies real-time data services, reported that the April crude oil futures contract was hit with over 2,500 contracts within 2 seconds.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty good. That actually, you know, I'm not so sure that's the biggest number I've ever heard either. I mean, the S&P has thousands of contracts sometimes that trade, don't they, per second? But maybe this market, that's a big number.
Apparently, I'm guessing for crude, that's, let me throw some
big
volume
number, yeah,
up here on the, let's see, put a little volume on the chart. Okay, here's the spike right here. 80,000 contracts traded in that hour.
Yeah, that's a good number.
Now let's go look at daily volume. Okay. Today's volume is 199,000. Now this is for the J contract. Are you in J?
We're in April, yeah.
Okay. Because they're saying at the close today, April actually becomes the front month. So,
okay. Well, okay. I don't remember if we talked about this on the radio program, but we did put it out in our report. We were forecasting that the week of February 11th, which was last week, along with the bigger roadmap, which you'd have to be part of the subscriber to know the bigger roadmap, but along with the bigger roadmap, on the way down, we were forecasting that the week of February 11th plus a week would touch the price of $93.74. So the beauty is that if a person was short, along with the bigger picture that we have for much lower prices, this would be sort of a place of headstone, not a, whatever you call it, a key place that the market would go along the way that we would know that they would touch. And so it took one extra week to do it. And today's low is 93.92. So we're very close, just within 20 ticks of them, you know, having completed the 93.74. On a weekly chart, it's effectively completing it. So that tells us the market's operating normally on one time frame, but on the daily chart, they did a tricky thing, and I like that. That's helpful.
Now, which month were you just quoting price from?
That's actually March.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because on my chart, when I go to the weekly, they're really still in the March contract. But if we go to the April, it'll quote the actual bottom for today. Let me go get up in April here real quick, because that's the market of real importance. Today's low is 94.21 in April. But the March contract, which is where we originally started the forecast from, has completed that and or gotten very close to it. So they're acting normally on one time frame. We've talked about this before, but on other time frames, they've shown unusual behavior, and this breakdown is very good for us. So,
Tim,
you know, for those that are short, this is good stuff.
Tim had a question, and it's a good point that you bring up, Tim. They've been talking about it now for a couple of days. In 15 minutes, 2 p.m. Eastern, we get the Fed notes release.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of speculation that whatever's in those notes could have a huge effect today on both gold and the bonds.
Okay.
So if we're still talking 15 minutes from now when those notes come out, we may actually see it unfold here on the screen, whatever that is.
Oh, that's great. Well, this is good. So I'm very pleased so far with the crude oil position. I mean, it's running, and we have people in it, and I know some of our subscribers are doing it. So people have to decide who they are in this trade, because the temptation is, so, well, God, I've got a nice profit. I don't want to lose it. But if you're really in it for the bigger move, then you stay around for a while. And the forecast was originally for the initial move up from, roughly 85 in early December up to 95 or higher into January. January would mark a top, and then we'd have this larger decline on the downside, which clearly I think now is underway. So just real quick, one last thing I'll throw out there for today. Well, it's not even necessary. I mean, they're going to close badly today, so we don't have to worry about the daily close and all that. So let's move on to the – let me double-check one other thing as we're talking about crude here, because okay. No,
as of today's close, April does become the front month. So.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Let's move on to a few other things. Of course, silver is down very big as well, along with gold. The Australian dollar, we've talked about this many times. We're still – awaiting the completion test or attempt at 101.64. This is basis their March contract, and we had a daily top in this a few days back. Those of you with reflected wave know about the February 14th top. It actually came a day late on February 15th, and we've stayed below that. We declined, and we bounced, and very similar, by the way, to crude. They bounced 2 days and then had this big decline today. So We're watching the Australian dollar for completion. If the Australian dollar does complete on the downside, as we're talking about, which we believe it will, which is at the 101.64 or lower, then we're going to be of a mind to start looking to trade long the Australian dollar from a March bottom. And we'll talk about that as we get closer. So, and I think, was there anything else we had to talk about? I think Tesla, if we just
can you do soda?
Of course. And let me just take a quick look at Tesla here for a second. All right. No
big
deal. All right. I don't have a lot else to add.
Because we had that, you said that February spot, which we hit, and now it's been pulling back.
Okay.
And then there is some news that they're doing deals with Walmart. They're really, you know, pushing to get into the U.S.
Yeah.
So
I'll get to it in just a second. I just want to say Richard had asked about the February 25th date. I haven't seen anything yet, but we may end up having something, but I don't have anything immediately. I do want to say with regard to soybeans, because I, you know, a lot of these markets seem unconnected, but they have the same dates. The February tomorrow, which is February 21st, is the next important, would normally be the next important top for soybeans. So keep that in mind. That's one date for Richard that we're looking at. That's what I was saying. I thought there was a 20th or 21st that was in play. The dollar is kind of the opposite of the euro, so we don't have to go into too much in that. That would imply higher dollar prices because of the euro setup. And then finally, let's see here. I just want to mention this one more time. I can't take, you know, we're not taking credit for this huge decline in copper that we would have been in it for the whole thing. But Reflected Wave had called for a top on the week of February 4th. We were looking for a multi-week decline, and we talked several times about the low that they had made on February 11th and February 12th was not the, they needed to go lower than that and would go lower than that. And 2 days ago, they really hit it hard, went down, and so this market has really broke wide open on the downside. In our upcoming March 16th and 17th seminar here in Las Vegas, we're going to show this chart and show how we knew that and how anybody with a Reflected Wave would know that completely objectively. There's no subjectiveness to this at all. It's just a rule-based thing, and it works out a very high percentage of times that they needed to go lower and so on. So we'll keep an eye on that. Other than that, Dwayne, I think that's probably everything that we have of importance. Natural gas, one last market I do want to cover is natural gas. This market is, we had been forecasting a February bottom for natural gas, and that there was a weekly price that the market would touch the 317 level during the week of February 11th. This was forecast several weeks prior to that. They did touch the 317, and they closed at about 315.7. The interesting thing about this is that weekly bottom is probably the bottom that we're forecasting for the month of February. So it's very likely that we are done on the downside with natural gas and that the monthly bottom is in play. And those of you who subscribe to us, you'll see a monthly roadmap probably come out with this. So that is, I think, the whole darn shoot match other than soda, which I'm now looking at. And Robin, I don't know if I have much else to add to it except that soda got up to some of the levels we talked about,
mm-hmm.
and that all of this is part of that monthly top that soda has for February. And there's that date again, February. The month of February is important in a number of markets for tops and bottoms. And so soda is, we expect to see soda either having already topped in January or perhaps mm-hmm. they'll be able to get up there. I don't know if you had a specific question about it, but.
No, I was just going to say that we did get through that. We were looking to get through that 52 range. We got through that, went
yes.
up to, it looked like we touched 54, and then it started pulling back. Now, we had a nice run up there since mid-November. You know, a nice run up, and
yeah.
then, you know, we did the Super Bowl thing, and now we're into Q1, and now I think they'll get their marketing place. So right now, I'm expecting some kind of a pullback.
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with you. I'll tell you why I agree with you on this. This isn't an outright forecast, but anytime the market can move above a level like 52 in this particular stock,
mm-hmm.
and then they suddenly today they gap below it and they will close today, and I guarantee you they'll close many days now below 52. Mm-hmm. What they mm-hmm. just did is kind of a head fake on 52. They closed above it, and now it's just like, just kidding. Mm-hmm. Now mm-hmm. that just kidding means they're not kidding. Okay, that means that they cannot get above 52, and you're going to see they're going to struggle with 52 for many, mm-hmm. many days here now. Just the fact that it goes
above. So patience right now is the thing for me on this.
Unless you're shorting and or trying to do something else
unless
with it.
Unless you're shorting, yeah.
What one thing I would possibly consider in a stock like this is let this period go, let them have the mm-hmm. decline, and if they give us something important, then I would be looking potentially maybe to sell puts, you know, what we do in our deal, sell options on the downside, mm-hmm. which is basically a bet on the long side.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that's helpful. It's not a big deal,
yes.
but
thank you.
It's a little something. Anyway, and that's about, Duane, I think that's everything that we have. S&P's real quiet here. They're spending their time here, and we'll see what they can do. If they have anything more on the downside, maybe they can, maybe before the day's out here, they can push it and try to get down to some of these lower prices. But as it stands right now, we're just, you know, we have our stops in, and we're going to wait and see if they can give us a little bit of a reversal on the upside here, more than what the little bounce that they've given us so far. So,
okay, let me see if there was somebody had a question on Citrix.
Citrix.
Let's take a look, see what that is.
Let's take a look at that and see what that's
I know the company we're using.
We talked about this at some point. I think you and I did, or somebody. I think somebody had asked about Citrix at one point. This is a stock that's doing really, really well. These guys are through the roof. If I'm not mistaken, this is Catamaran Corporation. Is that right?
No, this is Citrix, I believe, the makers.
It's the GoTo webinar.
Webinar software.
Oh, well, can you give me the – I'm sorry, Dane. So take that all back. What's the symbol?
CTRX.
Well, that's what I have in. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, it looks like it's trading at about $55.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It says Catamaran Corporation.
Well, maybe it is. I thought with that symbol it would be CTRX. But if it's not, I thought it would be Citrix. But if it's not.
Yeah. Well, if there, maybe the listener can clarify if this is what he's talking about, because we're all thinking of different things here. This is a market that responds very well to the reflected wave. They're in a very strong position. I do not expect to see
closes below. Yeah, that is Catamaran. It's not Citrix Online.
Okay.
Now
I don't
Citrix
expect
Online
to see
is
this market.
Is.
I'm sorry?
I'm curious what Citrix's symbol is. They should have had that symbol.
Oh, I see. Got you. It sounds like another company, right. Anyway, no, they're in a very strong position. This is a market that's breaking out above a lot of critical levels inside an existing longer-term trend. I mean, I don't have the everything up on this right now, but I do want to say that it's one of the strongest stocks I've seen. Looking at it here, there's no doubt in my mind. I haven't seen something that looks quite like this in some time here. Today's market is down. This market is up, and so on. So the low that they just put in, roughly speaking, this is kind of general, but I'm seeing this for the first time here. But let me give you an example of this is breaking out to all-time new highs. So this is not this stock has not been there before, and it's not an expensive stock. Let me take a minute here and let's see what we can. Just give a rough estimate, and they may already have done the rough estimate, but let's find out. So that's 7. Give me just a moment. 40. So we'd be talking about them getting up to $56.89, and today's high is 55. So at the bare minimum, the market has, up to 57 here. Even if there is going to be a reaction, I would expect somewhat higher prices. This is at a first glance, so forgive any of that. But they're going to move higher, and every other indication has that they're moving higher. It's not a difficult call. And what a remarkable run this company has had. I'm not sure that I've seen anything like this in quite some time. So, if you see it on your chart there on a longer term, or I'm not sure what time frame you're looking at it on, but
that was daily.
Yeah, can you go up to, say, a yearly chart?
No, on this chart, on this, I can only go up to a weekly.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe weekly will show what I want to show you here. Yeah, it doesn't quite, yeah. But anyway, if you could see it on the time frames,
strong.
The longer term time frames, it's just been straight up on a yearly basis, year after year after year after year. This is a very, very strong stock. So anyway, I hope that's helpful. I mean, I would stay, if you were in it, I would stay long. I don't know what your position is, and I really don't need to, but there's really a potential for much more than just the little bit that I'm talking about, but that first level, the first level of importance is around 56.89 to 57, right in that range. That's the only first initial thing that I can do with it right here for you, and that's all-time new highs kind of stuff. So that's not... We're not taking into consideration everything and where they really could be going, but that's one of the first places that I'd look. So I hope that's a little helpful. So
okay, breaking news. What have we got? Awaiting the FOMC. Okay, I thought they had the minutes out, but not yet.
Oh, okay.
Want quick quotes?
Sure.
Go right ahead.
Okay. A foolish man seeks happiness in the distance. A wise grows it under his feet. James Oppenheimer. Happiness is a habit. Cultivate it. Hubbard. And you must not only give what you have, you must give what you are. Dyer Mercer. I believe in myself. I believe in my wisdom, my life, my talent, my art. More than anyone, no one can take that away from me. Sabrina Harrison.
Well, she believes.
She believes.
Okay, well, so, Duane, I think that's everything we've got for you today. Pleasure to be on the program, and Robin, it's nice to have you on.
Yes, and thank you, and remember that Friday is Coach's Corner, and we're talking this week about transitioning from sim trading to live trading. The big leap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, the FOMC is out. Financial market conditions improved between December and January. Let's see what's going to happen with gold, if anything. Let's drop it down to... We'll go down to a five-minute chart.
The government spending dropped due to sharp decline in defense spending.
Okay, let's see what's going on here.
There we go. We broke to new lows here.
Here we go.
Here we go.
New lows, 1575. 1575.20 says the April contract. Let's see. Esther George dissents. FOMC, more businesses optimistic about economic outlook. These are just topics from the notes. Okay, now gold. It's pretty active.
Mm-hmm.
Crude down 240. Well, there it goes. Look.
Yep. There she goes.
There she goes. Wow.
Dive.
Look at that.
Dive. That's what we used to say in the trading room.
Whoa, look at that.
Whoa. Hope somebody's on that puppy. Wow.
Oh, 50,
you talking about
55.
In which market?
The one that he's got on the screen.
Yeah, on the screen.
GGCJ3.
Oh.
Is that gold?
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, yeah,
gold.
They're completing.
Yes, daily session.
It's gold, Robin.
Gold, yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Well, there it is, the 15, they're almost at 1562, the level we were talking about in our report, and that's the thing. That's the trade. Interesting, and this is why if somebody, again, I hate to bring this up, but if somebody was long and have been trading and wants to wait, they could really hurt themselves by being in something like this because already the market's broken in critical levels, but, you know.
Yep.
So.
Stops. Put in your stops.
Yeah. Why not?
It'll serve you. I mean, you know. It will serve you in the future. It'll keep you in the game.
Well, there you go, Dwayne. Well, listen, with all the movement here, we'll get scooting along. Thank you very much for having me on the program, Robin. It's charming to have you on. It's always a beautiful day in Las Vegas.
Thank you so much, David.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow. Thank you for the questions, and looking forward to tomorrow's session here.
All right.
Yes,
David.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Robin, take care. Have a great afternoon, guys.
You
Thank
too.
You, Dwayne. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you.
Okay, that's it. Fred Notes are out. And bonds and gold both took a shellacking. Bonds, the low 142.24 so far. Back to gold. Let's see. What do we got? 1565 even? Yeah. So far. Now, after about 15 minutes, this will settle down, and we'll get an idea as to whether or not this is an overreaction or if they mean business. Crude. Let's look at crude real quick. JCLJ. Bonds and gold were expected to be impacted more than crude. Okay, yeah, no real effect on crude, and we didn't expect one, but back to gold. Okay, so far the low, 1565 even, so far. But on this 5-minute chart, you can see that the cycle indicator is red and hooked, ready to head down. So we got some more to come. Looks like we're getting ready to make a fresh low right here. Okay, the bonds, the low so far, 142.24. And gold, boy, it didn't put in a new low there, okay? But this thing's probably not over. $15.65. Now, if you're still bullish gold, what a great place to be long from. And there's enough gold bulls left out there. This price is going to start to appear very attractive to some. Now, whether that's going to turn it around, and you know, I don't know. I just know that there'll be some who bought gold back here. People who saw gold as a, you know, there were people buying gold at 1757 back in November. And the people who thought it was a good deal then, now, granted, many of them are out, but there are those who are going to look at this price and go, you know, whether they're right or wrong, there's going to be people that get in here and say, you know what, if there is going to be another bull leg up, I want to be a part of it. Now, we saw in the 5-minute chart that the cycle indicator was just starting to hook its way down. But if we're on a daily chart now, okay, we've been in that decline on the cycle indicator for quite a while. In fact, we're getting close to territory on the daily where we would start to hook our way back up. Okay. So on the smaller time frame, more room to go. And even on the daily, I mean, there's still room to go here. And as you can see from here, this thing can stay in an overbought or oversold position for quite a number of days. But this is just a general indicator, just something to kind of look at and give you an idea of where the next wave may come. So probably a little more to the downside, but then we're going to see, you know, some buying strength come in. If it'll have the ability to, if we look left, you know, the first major objective is going to be right here at 1687. Look left again, 1700. Look left again, 1727. I mean, those are areas that are just on your chart. All you got to do is look left to see them. There's no great mystery. Okay, when the market tried to rally here, there was no support. Here, here. Just walk your way back across the chart. And those will be little pockets of resistance that we'll run into if gold tries to make a rally. And I believe that it will. Okay, let me see if there's any final questions over here. Okay, I think that's it. I think we covered it all. Okay. Okay, we did get some lower prices on the S&P, but now that's starting to firm itself up. Way to go, Kyle. Kyle made 5 points on that. Okay. Good job, Kyle. Trading the weekly trading zones. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, that's it, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.